This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
The Koigig Pod.
Who is this serving and what is the end goal would be kind of nice to know.
I feel like we haven't had quite enough Irish bias this year, so I am quite happy to see this.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now. OTB GAA.
Welcome to the Mike Quirk Podcast.
Now give me my theme music.
This series is brought to you with the help of PST Sport. PST Sport is a design and build specialist contractor focusing exclusively on the design and construction of artificial grass pitches and supporting infrastructure for soccer, GAA, rugby, hockey and tennis. PST's portfolio includes over 50 FIFA certified artificial grass pitches, as well as multiple pitches tested and approved for World Rugby, GAA and FIH standards. PST Sports have done over 500 artificial grass pitches for clubs, schools, colleges and local authorities in Ireland and the UK for all different sporting codes. Visit pstsport.com for more details. Okay, welcome again to everybody to our sixth episode in the second series. And again, for people who are tuning in for the first time, I suppose this is generally about coaching and sports performance, a little bit of everything, really. And for those that wouldn't be aware, this is as a fundraiser for Recovery Haven, who are an organization based in Tralee in County Kerry, who provide free cancer support services for the people of Kerry and beyond. And for people who do find a bit of value in the content of any of the episodes, there's a link in the podcast description below or on my Twitter page at Mike Quirk, and we would ask people just to donate any couple of euros to a really good cause. Today, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by someone who I've become very familiar with in the last year, from Galbally to Killarney, which is a nice trip, Paddy Talley. Paddy, very welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, great to be here, and on a night, especially with such a good cause associated with your podcast. So listen, anybody out there, as Mike says, throw a few pounds in the pot. I know it's coming to Christmas now and all this money will be really greatly appreciated for Haven.
For sure. Yeah, fair play. Yeah. How's everything up that side of the country, Paddy?
It's cold.
Is it cold up there, yeah?
Yeah, I seen -7 this morning in the car when I was leaving the kids to school. So it's pretty sharp, hard for us at the moment. But it's lovely. It's nice, but pretty cold, Mike.
To be fair, you would often have said, Paddy, when you came down here, the sun never shine in Killarney or Tralee, but it was always nice up there. Yeah.
But no, it's not the sun, it's the rain. The sun would come out now and again, but the amount of rain you have down there is savage, like, you know, and it seems just come on as you go through past Limerick and then it just starts to rain, you know, so they know what it is.
Yeah. So the golf courses are so nice, though. Yeah.
Well, the golf is always green. They're always nice and green.
Yeah. So come here. We'll get into it a little bit, Paddy. And again, I'd like this to kind of, this is obviously not specific to any of those multitude of teams. I was just even looking it up. Obviously, you were involved with Tyrone in 2003, the All-Ireland final with Down in 2010. You were involved with Kevin Welsh in Galway. Obviously involved this year with Kerry in 2022, Sigurdsson with St. Mary's in 2017. You're lecturing above. Are you still there in the PE department above in St. Mary's? So you're as well positioned as anybody to talk about coaching and what it is. So maybe even just start there, Paddy. What for you in terms of coaching? What's the stuff that comes into your head when somebody talks to you about coaching?
Yeah. I suppose my own involvement in coaching started off from a very early age, you know, getting get involved in my own club teams underage level, Mike. And then as things progressed, I started work with the University of St Mary's. I was lecturing St Mary's, and I was taking the Sigerson Cup team. And that probably was my key learning experience, you know, where I learned an awful lot about coaching in that environment. I was quite young at the time. I'd only left college a few years. I was teaching, and they asked me to come back and to work with the team. So I think that was around about 2000. And but those 2 or 3 years of coaching third level students was really, really important to my development. I think that opened my eyes out to the possibilities of what you could do when you're working with really good players. A lot of these lads were playing county under 20s, 21s that time. Some of them were broken into the county senior squads, and a lot of the lads had played county minors. So when they're coming to university level football, which university level football is great, especially in the winter time, and it's a high level football. And I think I think those years were crucial in developing myself as a coach. I really enjoyed those years, and then I brought me into working with into county level in 2003, and I've been sort of, I think I just finished my 15th year there of into county senior coaching and management there this year. So coaching has been an evolving process for myself. I have to say, like, and every challenge, every time you work with a new team, it provides a whole new range of challenges. But that's what keeps interesting, you know. And I think the key is you never feel as if you've learned enough. You're always looking to see what you're doing, how you can bring it to a team, and if it works, fantastic. And if not, you have to go back and look at it again and trying to change things. But it's been sort of a big part of my life now, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah. And that idea of it evolving from like 2000. So that was the first time you were involved in a kind of coaching capacity with St Mary's back early 2000. So,
yeah, I was doing a bit of work with my underage teams in the club, you know, but really I suppose when you're working with senior level players or adult players, it was about 2000 I started to work at that time. So it was great. I think it was a key. Once I got a taste for that level and you could see the quality of the football you could get out of players and how committed, I suppose St Mary's is notoriously good in terms of commitment to players. You know, they are very good at that over the years. And we're nearly able to punch above our weight most years. Like, so I think that gave us a great inspiration too, that, you know, if you can get players at that level doing really well, what could you do with really good players? And that's really what happened, is because when 2003 came along and I was asked to coach the Tyrone team, I was still quite young. I think I just turned 30. At 29, actually, when I took the job on. But now I was able to put the stuff I was doing with the college players, but now I was putting it in with a really good, talented inter-county team.
Yeah.
And it then started really, it worked really well that year. We won the All-Ireland, so
yeah,
it's good.
And just staying with the college thing for a second, because I'm looking at it now and I'm saying, like, the Sigerson in particular, in terms of football, obviously Fitzgibbon and hurling and different things, like, the window is getting so compressed for senior college football now at third level. It's a wonder. I'm not sure what the future of it is going to look like. And you spoke about how important it is, I think, for players' development. It's such good level football, and even the friendships that fellas make playing it and having a meaningful competition. It really looks like it's getting squeezed to the last now in terms of the amount of time it's developed to actually play these games.
Yeah, Mike, that's a really good question. It's something we have talked about a lot. I think the last proper weekend was 17, the year St Mary's won the Sigerson, and it hasn't been a weekend since. But when I went to college back in the 90s, I started college in 92, and the Sigerson weekend was something you just live for, if you could get to it, like, you know, just to get the experience playing that three, it was actually that time it done 3 matches over 3 days. Now, it come to the Sunday, if you made it to the weekend, to the last day, like, it was nearly survival of the fittest. Who still had a squad that you put out in the field? But it was quite unique in that way, you know, the way it was ran. But everybody gave everything to it, you know, every college player loved playing it. It was the time of year, the referees a bit more lenient, the conditions weren't great. It was a bit more rough and tumble, you know, but you found out an awful lot about the quality of the player, but also the character of the players you're playing with and against. Did they really want to be there on a wet Wednesday or on when maybe traveling a couple of hundred miles in somebody's backyard, you know? So there was that thing. And I could always see, like, the players that may went back to their clubs after playing Sigerson football, and you may never hear tell them in a game,
yeah,
but they just disappeared again. But for those 3 or 4 years, they were like they were savages, you know, and they just loved it. And you mentioned the camaraderie and the friendship and those friendships are still there. You know, I know you have probably the same experience. I know I spoke to Murph one day about his time in UL, and I know myself and Samiri's and talked and see, like when you see the Cork UCC lads and UCD, no matter what, there's always that connection through football. And I think it's a special opportunity for players, and it is getting squeezed. You know, the window now is getting where it's been run off in 4 weeks or something, start to finish, and it's Wednesday, 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 and they're nearly glad to get over, get out of the way. And I think it's a shame, you know, but it's unfortunately we've got the stage now where between intercounty and the way the club season's run into interprovincials now as well, the college football is taking a squeeze, which is it's a pity.
It is. It's just one of those things with the split season. It seems to be suffering a little bit from the collateral damage of the benefits, obviously, for the club and the county. But it does look like that window is getting a bit too compressed. Getting back into it, Paddy, like you're talking about starting there, we'll say, with St. Mary's at the Sigerson level around 2000. And now this is your 15th year. Did you say this run now is your 15th?
Yeah, I just was thinking back one day. Somebody asked me the question. I think I just finished my 15th year of intercounty coaching. Yeah.
So what was for you something that you could look back on and say that's an area that I've really, really improved on from when I started to where I am right now?
Yeah, I think it's just the game itself, Mike. You know, just knowledge of the game. I think that's my biggest change. If I look back to what I was doing at the very start, it was very much based on, you know, it was training and coaching. And if you go back, you know, a lot of stuff was supposed to come from a sort of sports science background. I was implementing a lot of new stuff back in the early 2000s where players maybe weren't exposed to it before. So a lot of my stuff was fairly good. It was fairly based on good reviewed work, you know, and tried and tested. And that's probably the benefit of being in St. Mary's, because you're using St. Mary's as a computer. Just, you know, you're using it to experiment with your players and your systems and your methods, you know. So then when you know all that done, you're bringing that into county level. But I look back at it now and I think, Jesus, it was very simplistic, you know, what I was doing. And maybe sometimes simple in terms of the technical aspects of the game, but sometimes too much in terms of content, if you know what I mean. Right. I was trying too hard to keep things happy. But now what I did over time was I learned to evolve my coaching to make it a lot simpler, to get the message through a lot easier. But I think I just learned more about the game, about coaching the game, you know, because I was focusing an awful lot on certain things in the game. And looking back, I said, geez, you know, there's an easier way of doing it, or a better way of doing it, or a more productive way of coaching. But the other thing too is everywhere I've coached, I've learned an awful lot from the people I work with. Like this year in Kerry, for example, I learned an awful lot from the management team and the players in Kerry that I wouldn't have known before going in, and the same in every other opportunity I've had. So I think it's a combination of experience and just knowing, understanding over time, which really has changed the way I view coaching nowadays.
Yeah, and that idea you mentioned, the kind of technical and tactical stuff, that obviously is a big part of it. Obviously, you have to have that kind of knowledge, but the other side of it of understanding how people are picking up your message and how they're going to take your message and moving on is probably the bit that you just have to gain that experience and go through there, I suppose, really.
You do, and if one advice I would say to coaches, don't rush things. You know, if you're a young coach out there and you're thinking of or getting involved in teams, you know, take your time. Don't feel you have to get to the end quickly. I've noticed a lot of really good coaches going in too quick, too hard, and then within a few years, they disappear off the coaching scene because they've been hurt by it, and things haven't worked out well, and they've maybe become a little bit disillusioned with it and maybe give up. Or my attitude would be, take your time, you know, don't rush things. Learn as much as you can along the way. Become an avid student of the game, and you know, and don't be expecting things just to work for you straight away. And I've been lucky enough that I did get a success quite early, which was good. But like, I got success, like, it's nearly 20 years since my first All Ireland to this year. Like, it was 19 years since 2003. So and in between there was 14 years or 15 years of learning in there as well. So although I did get success early, that this is another Ireland didn't come to another 19 years later. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And in between that time, I had to rethink an awful lot of what I was doing. So the coaches really, it's no automatic success here. You're just going to have to really work at it. So don't put yourself under pressure. Just enjoy the process as much as you possibly can, and become a real student of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that idea of a student of the game and learning is like it really is a kind of a lifelong, like you can't go to three courses and get a qualification and expect that things are going to roll out perfectly the way you want them to go. It's, you know, you're learning as many lessons from those kind of knocks and defeats and where things didn't yeah. work well in a training session as you are from the victories, obviously.
Ah, looking back at it, you'd nearly be cringing some of the things you did, like, you know, or nearly eat my own hand off myself when I think back to some of the things you did at times, and geez, I regret it. Like, but here, you learn from it. And even not just, you make there's so much to it. Like, you know, we obviously there's an organizing good coaching sessions. The coaching sessions are purposeful and there's a meaning behind it, and they're enjoyable and it's fun. You know, there's a good learning outcome at the end of it. But it's also then, it's dealing with players, it's dealing to understand different type of learners. You know, what's the best way to teach them? What's the best way to coach to get the most out of their sessions as well? So I think that only now, it's only really now you feel really feel confident in your trade. And I know that might sound a long time, but it has taken me a long time to get to feel pretty confident what I'm doing because I've made all those mistakes. And it's not even, you don't really know what you know until somebody asks you, you know, that wants to learn. And they sit down with you and say, come here, could you tell me about this and this and this? And you're able to tell them straight away because you've been there and you've had that experience. I think that's when you realize yourself, you've picked up a good bit along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're forced to actually think about it and put it out there to somebody, like you mentioned the players and the learners, they're at the center of everything that you're doing, really. And if they're not, you're probably not doing things in the right way. In terms of that, Paddy, like where are you? The technical and tactical stuff, I think, is the easy stuff, really. But in terms of what you've gained along the way, in terms of dealing with people and the players, and how best to get the most out of them, like what have you come across that has been big learning for you in that area?
Just lucky enough, Mike, because I come from a background where I grew up in a pub, you know, and we have a family pub. And It's one of the greatest universities of life, is dealing with people in a bar, you know, and all from 80 to 18 with all sorts of backgrounds, come from all sorts of, and have all sorts of needs in any given moment. So you do learn public, you know, dealing with people and public service is really good. And then supposed to I've been teaching now for 25 years. So you're constantly communicating and working with kids and students and in university, you know, you spend a lot of time with students as well. So you do really, you hone your teaching skills and your delivery skills as you go along. But you do learn that there's so many different ways of teaching nowadays. What I feel now is a concentration and staying on task is becoming something that we need to be really aware of. We can lose people very, very quickly. They can drift off because of now, like I laugh when I tell my students about, you know, having to go to the library years ago, you know, to get a book. And I would tell them about going to the little drawer and pulling out the drawer and then flicking through all the cards to find the 976.25 and then writing it down, then going upstairs three floors, going to all the bookmarks and getting the book out and then taking the book down, then photocopying the stuff and then putting it back in again. And that would take you maybe 15-20 minutes where now the flick it on the phone, there's the answer in front of you. You know, so and that's just the way life has been. So now young people want to know the answer straight away. They don't want to spend the time, I think. And fairness, this is the way it is. It's not their fault. I think they need answers pretty quickly. They need information pretty quickly. So I think we need to be on our game, you know, nowadays, and how we teach and how we learn, we coach, that we focus on good, sharp, succinct messaging without long, you know, trying to dry things out, because I think we can lose the younger players very quickly in that end of things. Mm-hmm. There's also then too, you know. I also feel that football and what I've learned about Kerry this year, that football means so much to the players at the highest level, you know, and every team I've worked with at county level, they find that, you know, they're really, really, the players that are there want to give everything they have. But we have to be conscious of the fact that if we're not working at that elite level of sport, you know, football may be something that the players are doing, but it might just not mean as much as we expect. So our motivation and our dream for that team may not match what the players want themselves. So we have to be wary of, you know, that not just because I feel it, that the players feel the same. You have to be aware of how they think. You know what actually motivates them to be successful. And I've used the example of a team one time when I after a game I had them in for a bit of a meeting and I asked about six or seven players how did they what was their motivation for the match at the weekend to win it. And of seven players I asked, it's seven different motivations. Right. You know, seven different reasons for winning the game. So now that was really sad. And if I extrapolated across the next 20 players, there could have been another 10. So even though we all want to win the game, the reason they want to win the game wasn't the result at the end of the day. A few of them just want to win the game because they want to get a one over the other team. But it could have been something to do with their own personal drive themselves. They want to prove a point. They wanted to do it for somebody else sometimes. You know, there's so many reasons. So it opened my mind to the fact that you got to be very open in how you think about motivate, how you think about winning. Because to get everybody focused on the same level, you got to think across a range of different areas.
Touching on motivation, obviously, is huge. I'm sure it's huge at every level, whether we're talking about under sevens or you're talking about senior intercounty. There's different levels, obviously, but it's a huge thing. In terms of things there for coaches, Paddy, and like, you know, the question of how do you motivate players now, and the old model, people motivated by trying to shout people down and tear them down and you know, it's all vocal roaring, shouting. Like, what way now are we talking about, you know, motivating players the best way that we possibly can?
Yeah, I think it's recently was we've been thinking about this, you know, because it's really, really important that we know what motivation means. You know, you're right. Back in the day, you know, it was rip roaring through the change room and take the door off the hinges on the way out, and you know, and take somebody's scalp off, you know, and that was how we played it. And here, some days it worked, some days that's what you just needed to do straight. But there's other days that I don't think that could work every day nowadays. It might work the odd time, but I think we got to be a bit more attuned to what motivation means. Interestingly, we've been talking about this, and there's three areas, I suppose, that you look at. Really, there has to be something. And again, go back to that point that I said about asking players what motivates them to win a game. They're all different reasons. So we got to be aware of what it means to someone individually to commit themselves to play football to start with. You know, it mightn't be just an easy choice for some people to make that commitment. Other players, people think it's just that they really want to do it. So we've got to understand that. I think we also have to have, we have to feel as if we have a purpose among the group. You know, the team has to have a clear purpose of where they want to go, a vision of how they want to go about it. And that purpose has to be a buy-in from the players too. So there has to be a fair amount of buy-in among the group. And that has to be clearly articulated. And there has to be a set of, some people talk about non-negotiables, things that you have to do in order to be part of it. Then you also have to allow for players to be themselves. I think we can't tar the same brush. Just because we all play the same team, it doesn't mean we're all the same. So we have to respect individuality within that as well. And if we get that there, then individually players will have their own individual motivation, you know. So I think there's a lot to it nowadays, you know, and that's why I'm saying it's just not a matter of expecting everything the same. We just got to be open-minded to what it's about. But I still think that, you know, the benefits of playing team sports are just incredible, you know, and especially with young people nowadays, what they can get from it, not just playing the game in terms of fitness, but the social, the psychological, you know, the fact that they're part of something, the feeling of well-being they get from doing it, you know, so the friendships that they're going to have for not just during that year, but for years to come. So I think we have a lot of things we need to be really positive about in our games and keep promoting those among the players. And that again can be highly motivating for a player too.
Mm. And like you've obviously mentioned youth sport there and like it's come up several times, like, and obviously there'd be people listening to this, Paddy, that are under sevens or nines or 11s coaches and then much older as well, obviously. But for those youth coaches, and that idea of motivation, I think is a really important topic to kind of just linger on for a minute, because that idea of shouting at people now, like kids, you mentioned how they communicate differently. Kids aren't listening to you shouting at them for 60 minutes to try and get them to play better. That's not how we're motivated to perform at our best anymore. And that doesn't work. Yeah, of course, there's maybe a short term burst of motivation that comes from, you know, I'll prove him wrong or I'll prove her wrong. But ultimately, it doesn't sustain and it doesn't last. Yeah. And eventually people will step away from the game. But like for those underage coaches or for those juvenile coaches, like what are some of the practical things that they can be doing in their sessions to try and, you know, keep kids motivated to keep coming back, keep showing up and keep playing and have all those benefits that you talk about from team sports?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. This is really important. And I suppose the first thing I always say is that it has to be enjoyable. For children, enjoyment and fun has to be the central point of our games. I think when they have that, we have in teacher training, we say to our students, there's a very clear line between enjoyment and success, or enjoyment and learning. So if a child enjoys what they're doing, they're much more likely to learn in that environment. If they continue to learn and continue to enjoy, they're much more chance of being successful. So if we think of the very first, what's the fundamental first stage is fun and enjoyment. And they'll keep coming back. And the more they come back, the better they'll get. And the better they get, the more chance they have of success. So, but we can't jump to success without thinking of fun at the very, very bottom. So I think we have to be, because nowadays, again, we're back to the point of young children need this stimulation, they need to have enjoyment, they need to be there. And parents need that as well. Parents need to have the reassurance that when you're bringing they're dropping the kid off to the local club for training or for practice sessions, that the kid's buzzing, coming home, really enjoyed themselves, and they want to go back the next day. You know, and I've had this with, I'll tell you a great story. There was a parent. I have a young lad. He's under 11 and a half this year, but a couple of years, he's under 9 and a half, so I helped out with the team. But there was this young kid parent. I went to school with him myself back years ago, and he'd bring his kid to the training. He came to me a few times. Says this lad has no interest at all. Doesn't really want to be here. I find it very hard to get him to come. And I said, right, okay. So I asked him. I said, what do you do? You know, he said, I come down here, and then I made him go out to the backyard, and I coach him. And I said, right, what are you telling him? I'm telling him what to be up to the ball. You know, I'm trying to explain this, the way you have to do things and need to improve this. And I said, right, okay. So straight away, I knew where the problem lay. And it wasn't the kid at 9 years old. It was daddy who really was trying to coach his own child. Now, he was best intentions in the world. But what he was basically doing was he was critiquing his child on the way home from training every night, bumping the back of the car and then telling him what you should do better. So by the time we lad got home, even though he might have enjoyed it, anything he got out of it was nearly taken away before the time we got home. Yeah. So I said to him, he says, what do you think I should do? I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I said, see next time you have him at a game or, you know, you take him home from training. When he gets into the car, don't mention what he did in terms of his sport. Don't critique his game. Don't talk what he did well. Don't tell what he did poorly. Just tell him, here, you know, that was great. I really enjoyed watching you play the other night. That's all you got to say. And he goes, but no, I need to tell him once. No, you don't. Just tell him that. And that's all you say to him for the next few while. When you lift him and tell him, just tell him, that was brilliant. I love watching you play. Nothing else. 5 or 6 words. And he says, why do you say that? And it's because that's all the child wants to hear from you. He just wants to know that daddy's happy and he's playing. He just wants to know. He's there. You are the most important male to him in his life. And all he wants to know, daddy's happy and what he's doing. So this particular guy says, this now wouldn't that be like him, you know, this boy was cut from a rock in the top of hell, you know, but he did it. And he came to me by, every weekend, he goes, he can't wait to get playing football now. He's coming down all the time. I said, what are you telling him? I just tell him, love watching him play. Great. So it was something I learned years ago, that a child at 9 doesn't want to know, that he just wants to know, is daddy happy? Is mummy happy? And that's all they want, because they just feel, if they're happy, I'm happy. So there's a tip for your coaches. Don't critique too much. Keep it fun and just tell them, I'm really enjoying watching you play. That's all the kids need to know. Whether it's your own child or somebody else's child, at that early age, that's more important than what they're doing. Because I think they will find a way. You know, I think we're starting to get this now. But I remember growing up years ago, Mike, there was a soccer magazine called Shoot. or, you know, remember shoot?
Yeah.
You used to get the bread man, used to bring it around on Saturday. our bread man had newspapers and magazines on Saturday.
Not our one, no.
Yeah, he was deadly. And so the shoot was about 25p or something, or 10p, whatever. But anyway, there was inside it, there was like, if you collected vouchers every week, you sent off for a Kenny Dalglish wallet and coaching thing. So when this thing came back, it was like a wee black wallet with Kenny Dalglish's signature in the front of it. But inside it, there was a coaching card. And one of the things in the coaching, it says, the tip from Kenny Dalglish is practice your skills. He says, until you get to 14 or 15, you know, just practice skill. Don't worry about winning. I thought to myself, that's come back when I was set. That's come back 40 years ago. And that's still pervaded to this day, still stands. Mm. You know, when they're young, skill. The winning will come as a consequence of it. You're for the work down the line. So skill, practice, enjoyment, and having that, getting the kids come back to it all the time. I think that's where that's why I'd be heading with the coaches, with the kids.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, that's brilliant. Yeah. And like, you know, the worst thing, I'm not sure who said it, the worst thing about youth sport is the scoreboard. But obviously when you say that, people are saying, oh, you're soft and they have to learn how to win and lose. And of course, yeah, they do. And there's no doubt about that. But like, Jesus, if you can just keep them coming, Petty, like just keep them coming, whatever you have to do to make it as enjoyable as you possibly can and keep them showing up. And the kids, like we spoke about this with a couple of people like Fionn Fitz and different people previously.
Yeah.
Like we don't know at 10 or 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 years of age, who are the guys that are going to play senior for your club or senior for your county, or we just don't know because they're just still finding their way. So the key for us, and it sounds easy to make it fun and enjoyable, but there's work in that, like, and there's a bit of skill in that, but it's so, so crucial for those young ages to make sure we just keep them coming back.
Oh, it is, surely. And, you know, the whole model of TGF, you know, teaching games for understanding is a brilliant model. I in my lecture in St. Mary's, my students are going to be, lots are going to be primary school teachers and also secondary school PE teachers. But we're teaching we use the TGFU model, the teaching games for understanding model. It's absolutely brilliant. But the key and the core aspect is it's all done through games. So no matter what you're doing with the children, do it through games. If it's a warm-up, it has to be a warm-up game. So if you want to build, like, you know, we do a warm-up game like tag chasing games where you're changing direction, agility, slowing, stopping, chasing. Like, it's all the skills you need for movement patterns. So rather than doing drills and out and out in straight lines or going on around a cone, around another cone, just play a game of tag where they're chasing. You're going to get all those movements built into somewhere where there's fun. And there's also decision-making. Where do I go? How do I avoid? How do I evade? How do I get? How do I chase? Where do I work to? Within boundaries and closing somebody off in a corner. So how many times have we done this at senior level? Closing them down the line that they can't get past you later on. But if you get that basic skill done when they're playing a game of tag, you know, in a chasing game. So, you know, what I'm saying is here, the model is based on games. So if it's a warm-up, give it a game. If it's a development of the session, small set of games with different wee conditions in it, and then you're playing games as whole games towards the end. So everything's done through games. And the reason that I say this, we're all going to do drill, is we can spend a lot of time doing drill, close practice. But that's something we have to do a bit surely, a bit of handling and a bit of warm-up, fine. But then get as quickly into your game-based stuff as possible, because that's where the children are going to learn to make decisions. And the better players, as we know, as they get older, are the better players that can make the right decisions in the games. So the earlier we introduce decision-making and problem-solving into their activities and get it done at an early age, by the time they come to 14 or 15, they have built a repertoire of skill and decision-making and game awareness that is second to none. And we didn't have that growing up. Like, if I go back to my underage coaching, I think our first underage football was under 14s. Like, when back this, but under 14s were first organised club football, but the first organised football was when we went to school at post primary school when there's first year team and under 14 school team. But our first club football was under 14, so we missed out on all those years of coaching or development because nobody knew what they were at, didn't know what to do it.
Yeah,
but I see the kids now at 11 and how good they are, their skill levels, their thinking. There's some of them are just incredibly good. But that's why I would really promote the TGFU model. It's accessible. Go onto the internet, TGFU games, and just look at what they do and just follow that model in your coaching. It takes a little bit of thinking and planning, it's not as easy to plan a session. You have to go game to game to game. You don't have to change the game every night, by the way, too. You know, this thing that you're not an entertainer, by the way. You know, you're there to make them better, but vary the games up on different nights, but keep good core games, the premise of what you're doing. And kids love it because it's all the games, all the fun, you know, and they'll go back to the point, if you put 20 lads out into a pitch and give them four jumpers and a ball, they'll make the rules up.
Yeah.
And they're not start doing drills. They just want to play a game. So, you know, that's the way it is. They'll just play a game, pick two teams and let's play, and they'll referee themselves and they'll do all. So sometimes we sit back, why do we have to control everything? You know, let's get them playing games. They'll organise everything else in between, you know.
Mm-hmm. You give them four jumpers and they're not going to make a line drill or a box to run around, or you know what I mean?
No.
But it's just I still think, and I made this point maybe recently in one of these as well, Paddy, that like I still think that we're doing too many, and I'm talking about underage coaching stuff. We still feel the need that we have to do 50% drills, 50% maybe we play a big game at the end. No, and I know that's changing, and a lot of coaches are becoming far more aware of the likes of teaching games for understanding and using like 2v2s and 4v4s and building into bigger games or whatever it is. But it's such an easier thing to do is to set up a few games, and it's so much more enjoyable for the kids or adults. It doesn't matter who it is. It's just such a much more enjoyable and a richer experience for those because of the decision-making and all those very game-specific movements that they have to do as well.
Ah, and the crack they have, like the fun they have through the two, brilliant. And if you keep score, if you're refereeing, you're giving bad decisions and you're turning the game over and you're getting scores wrong, and it's mad crack. Like, you know, they love it. It's fantastic.
Come here and just let's. I want to move up the line a little bit now again, right? Because I'm like that's some really good stuff there for our underage stuff. But in terms of, and it's not separate, but in terms of culture, Paddy, like culture is a kind of a big buzzword around the place at the moment. That, you know, again, if you win something, well, you must have had a great culture. And if you didn't win, well, maybe your culture was. What is kind of, and you've been involved now in a lot of different capacities in different counties and places. What does that kind of term culture mean to you? What does that in gender in your brain when you hear that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I don't think there's no definitive answer to that in terms of you can't just use one cultural experience from one area, one county is different to another.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're in Tyrone here, we would have a sort of a different culture to Kerry, for example, you know, and there's not one better than the other. It's just the way it is. We're really a product of our environment, and we're a product of our society, and this is just the way we are. So you have a different way of viewing what really is. But if you generalize, what culture really comes down to three things. It goes down to your values, your attitudes, and your beliefs, and that's what culture is. Your values within the group, the values within what are the values that are clearly defined, the attitudes about how you go about your training, and your general attitude is in how you prepare and how you carry yourself. And then your final is what is your beliefs about, you know, and that draws experience from your own upbringing, from the society, from your people, from your county, whatever. And that brings you who you are. So that's what I would always class as what culture really emanates from, the values, attitudes, and beliefs of any given team. Obviously there's lots of things that can be unique to a team, and people can get culture so wrong. I really mean this. I have not just last week, but a conversation with a friend of mine who's a coach in a different sport, and he was telling me how a particular head coach within a professional team is trying to bring a culture to a team that is contrary to everything the team believes in, and as a result of it, this team are doing really, really poorly. But he doesn't come from that area. He doesn't understand the people. He doesn't understand it. And he's trying to implement his own plan, and it's working really poorly at the minute. And he said to me, this is never going to work because nobody understands it. And it nearly goes against what they're trying to, what this place is about. Right. So grasping the culture is really important. Respecting it, you know, having a feel for what people think themselves. And then being able to align your philosophy around that is really, really important. Don't try and go in and change the culture or something unless you have a really strong ingrained knowledge and understanding of the people or the area you're working in. I think it's very, very difficult. Professional sports, it might be easier in certain sort of professional sport because it's a lot. It's about, you know, the successful professional teams that are really, really good are also very culturally very sound, but their culture very much on a professional attitude. You know, it's their job, it's their basis, and they will tap into certain aspects of where they're from and whatever. But generally, these people, they're getting paid to do their job, and their culture is very much based on it's performance based. Whereas I think in Gaelic games, we got to be very wary and respectful of the people or where they come from, and align our philosophy and our thinking and our attitudes and our beliefs and values to that particular area. So it can play a big part, Mike, as you know yourself. You've seen it living and breathing in your own county. You've seen where there's an incredible culture and care for the game and a love for the game. It doesn't mean you're going to be successful every time. But it certainly gives you a good start in the sense that when the players put on a Kerry jersey or get to the stage where they're representing the county, they have a certain level of expectation that they have to wear this jersey in a certain way and behave in a certain fashion. And that's a great head start because lots of counties that don't have success find that very difficult. You know, when you and I have spoken about this ourselves, the challenges you and I have had in the past of managing counties where it's tougher to get that message across. And maybe it's because they don't deep down don't believe themselves that they could be successful. And I think that's where Kerry are different. They know that if they do things right, there's a chance there's gonna be success where lots of other counties it's not there. Yeah. In a club level, I think it's incredible that what's going on down there at the moment with your Munster champions now in all three, a senior, intermediate, and junior in club as well. You know, and I think that's testament to the clubs as well. And you know, it's a very successful time in Kerry football in the clubs in Kerry. And I think whatever's going on, it's seeming to bode well for your county.
It's the rain, Paddy. It's something to do with the rain, man. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah.
You know, there's something there. But like, just to stay on that for a second, on the culture side of it, right? And when you talk about the clubs, like obviously Kerry have kind of a thing that's ingrained in our history, or you know, different to Tyrone, different to Dublin, different to everybody else. They have their own unique ones that are individual, but all clubs do, and you know, basketball clubs do, or rugby clubs, or soccer clubs. We all have our own kind of culture that's there. But if you're somebody who's coming in and wanting to improve that or to enhance it, to try and get more out of your team or your players or your club, like, is there any kind of like practical things, you know, that we can do as coaches at those levels to try and develop something really positive within our own team?
Yeah, I think the key, Mike, is there has to be an engagement from everybody that's going to be involved in that particular team. To walk in as a coach and say, this is the way it's going to be, and this is my idea, and, you know, you have to toe the line. And this is what I'm talking about, the coach I mentioned a few minutes ago, with reference that he trying to change something that's virtually impossible to change, is not going to work. I think you have to bring everybody with you. I think there has to be, when you are working with a team, that's, you know, there's so much knowledge and there's so much experience within the room that you're there, that you got to draw on that. You got to engage the players to become part of what we're about. So let's go back to what I talked earlier on about motivation. And we talked about, you know, having a purpose, you know, a shared purpose within a group. You know, so when we're talking about having a shared purpose that will drive us all together, essentially what you're doing is you're creating a culture, because once you're getting people to buy into a shared purpose, in order to keep that purpose going where you want that staying within that, on that vision and that purpose, you're going to create a culture of behavior around that that's going to drive it. And you may be able to draw on some of the inspiration from the local area, but generally what you're doing is you're drawing from the power of the players themselves. Mm-hmm. What's innate within those individuals, and you're using that to shape your culture. You know, so all successful sports teams, if you look at it, have been driven by internal. It's not something coming from the outside. The people that maybe come from the outside were the people that became the architects of it. Mm-hmm. But they used what was there. They used the power of what was there to shape it and to drive it and to form it and to continue it. Like, and I think that's where I think you have to go with. You have to bring people on that journey with you. Now there's a skill in that. There's a skill in that. It's not something that everybody is able to do. And this is where you maybe sometimes consulting with people outside of, you know, to specialize in that particular area is really good as well.
Mm-hmm. But that the key message is you have to bring people with you, obviously. It has to be theirs as opposed to something that you're trying to impose from the outside, like your buddy that you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Yeah.
Engaging players there, Paddy. You mentioned just engaging players. Like, what are some of the things that you found that works really well in terms of engaging players? Like, obviously, we're talking about we need to bring players with us. We need to involve them in, you know, the games and different things.
Yeah.
What have you found that really works well in terms of engaging players?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to not have an us and them. You're not having a I'm the coach and you're the player, and there's a sort of a I don't really believe in the divide between the two. You know, I think that there's respect coming back and forward both ways. There shouldn't be a divide between the two. I think we're in this together. I think the players have to be equally as comfortable speaking to me as they can, a teammate, and I feel equally as comfortable speaking to them as I am to part of the management team. You know, I think that's really important. I think we got that pretty good in where we are at the moment. I think we're finding that and we're developing that further. I think it's really important because I think that builds trust. I think that helps to garner trust between the players and the coaches. So I'm not a big believer in sort of standoffish. I never was. I don't think it really benefited anybody. To be honest, we don't have time to be standoffish because we're so limited in the amount of time we have with our players. Every moment's precious. So when we get an opportunity to speak to somebody, even just talk to them, how you're on or what's going on or how's work or what's life going on or, you know, do you see my Kirk's haircut recently? It's lovely, you know, or whatever. Is he still playing basketball? You know, but what I'm saying is here, you got to make the most of every moment. Mm-hmm. So I think that I never was a believer in standoff players in any way. So I think that's how engagement happens. Having that moment, sit down, have a chat. If you ever get a chance to go for a cup of coffee or even after a game, have a pint with somebody, it's just lovely. Like, you know, having that, even some of the most enjoyable moments this year was after the final when we spent a couple of days on the road and you had a great chance to talk to the players after it was over. And you realise, Jesus, you know, I think everybody realises we're only in for the same thing. We want to do well. And I think you have to have that open, I think that openness between coaches and players, I think that's crucial, you know. Mm-hmm. So that to me is in terms of engagement, I think that's the first step, is having that open. And I suppose it goes back to my teaching and my lecturing. Like, I have an open door policy in the university where my door is never closed. My office door is never closed. It's left open all the time for a student. If they want to walk in, sit down, have a chat, no matter what, they can come in and do it. Just leave it wide open. And I always left it that reason. I keep telling them the door's open, they'll never be closed. Unless somebody comes in for a private meeting and they're being engaged, sign on it. But generally, just to allow people to come for a chat. And I think modern day young people need that. They need to have that feeling that the person that's there working with them is more than just looking out for their coach, their football or their sport, but also looking out for them too. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's good. And, you know, like, you know, we're never gonna as coaches probably understand the impact you're gonna have on anybody to lot further down the line. You know, it'll be down the line or in years to come when you probably somebody'll say something to you about, you know, you remember you coached me at such and such a time, whatever, and you helped me this, you helped me that, whatever, and that's great. And that's what really we're in there for. Like, you know, well, it's all I really want to know is when if a player ever says thank you to me, that's my success. You know, that you've known you've helped that particular player or that particular team, that's good enough for me. Like, you know, so I think that engagement from the start is really important, and then continually staying engaged as we go along. And you know, it's quite easy to come and go every training session, and you might not speak to every player every night in training. You know, you might have an opportunity, but if you can over the course of the week, speak to as many as you can.
Yeah, and like even like you mentioned there, an open door policy in at work, and like that's a very physical kind of signal to people that, you know, like I want to talk, like come to me and we can have a conversation. And like anything that you mentioned there was really about talking to people. Like it wasn't, there's nothing hugely complicated about, you know, speaking to somebody and asking them what's going on and how are you, and the information that you'll actually get if you ask people questions and you talk to them for a couple of minutes. And it is difficult, particularly when you're dealing with 30 plus people, to try and get to everybody within a week or two. That's hard, obviously. But if you're talking about people that are operating at different levels with less people, you know, it should be more manageable to get to those people as often as you can, you know?
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah, that's so important, Mike. You know, and it's incredible what you can find out in a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, about somebody's mood or somebody's going on with kids. I in the past, players have come to me and talk with things, and I had no idea what was going on. Like, I had absolutely, I mean, noticed the form, dipped a bit in training, and I was saying, God, what's wrong? Then when we drilled down into it, some young players were having horrid times, you know, in their personal lives. I always remember one where a young kid came to me, and he had a gambling addiction. I didn't see it. Wouldn't have saw it any day. He missed a few classes in college and he wasn't coming to class. And I called him in for a chat one day and I asked him, what's the story? And he says, told me he was thousands and thousands of pounds in debt. And he had a gambling addiction. And I asked him, I remember saying to him, how does this manifest itself? He says, if I had £5 in my pocket, and I was starving, I walked past the bookies. I couldn't make it to the shop. Like, I'll go into the bookies. He says, I don't know how to do about it. So anyway, thankfully he told me, I was able to get him help, and it worked out fine. What I'm saying is, you know, that was an opportunity of an open door that I didn't expect coming, but he came seeking me out because he needed that little bit of help. You know, so what I've learned about that is, in dealing with young people, presume nothing, you know. Okay, we want to do well as coaches and we want our teams to be successful. But we've got to be very aware of the individual. Let's go back to my point a bit earlier on about when you're creating within that motivation, you've got to be really aware of the individual. What's happening? Now, we don't want to be soft. That's the odd thing too. You got to strike that balance. But I think if there's true respect there between coaches and players, you know, nobody will take liberties. Players won't take liberties and coaches won't do that. But you just have to let them know that the door's open. You know, I'm all right. And if there's something, like, I mightn't be able to help you, but I'll surely be able to find you somebody who can help you, you know.
Yeah. And that, you know, you mentioned soft there, and that is almost the thing that some coaches look at this and they kind of go, well, look, you know, I'm about winning here. I'm about driving these fellas and I want to get the very most out of them. But like there's still room in that for dealing with people and having good people skills and creating a kind of an atmosphere where people feel comfortable enough to come and talk to you and say, you know what, Paddy, I'm struggling here, man. I actually need a bit of help.
Yeah. Listen, here, Mike, it happens. And if footballers aren't infallible just because they're super athletes and some of these guys are high profile and they're think they have an ideal world, and you know, a young person looking up to an intercounty senior playing, God, he has everything going for him. You know, he's in great shape, he's fit, he's playing intercounty football, he's lucky, he's got the gear, and you know, life's good for him, but you never really can tell, you know. So that's where we got to be, you know, be aware of that. And I think that's where, you know, being vulnerable, you know, interesting. I listened to a podcast recently from a Navy SEAL. And the Navy SEALs would be seen as quite elite in American sport or American military. Mm-hmm. But one of the things he talked about was vulnerability. He says that they learned that they had to be vulnerable. Do you think, you know, you're talking about being hard, they're actually taught to be vulnerable and they're actually pulled apart by their commanders to be vulnerable and open. Otherwise, they'll never learn and they can't learn. So what I'm saying is, you know, in sport too, we need to be wary of that, and I think respectful, and if we can help anybody in any way, we'll always be there for them.
Yeah, Paddy, we're going to leave it there because I've got you now for about an hour, and I don't want to delay you. To put a ribbon on it, Paddy, to put a nice bow on it and put it under the tree. What if there was one message that you could send to coaches of all age groups, to make sure that, you know, that they're delivering as best as they possibly can for the kids or adults under their care. Give it to me. What's your magic solution to improving everybody and what we're doing?
Yeah, I think just, you know, continue to be inquisitive, continue to strive to learn. There's a great speak in sport is when you, it's what you learn when you know it all that counts, you know, and I think that's a really good one. You know, when you think you know it all, what you learn after that is even better, you know. So what I'm saying is, lucky enough, we've had success this year, but I know straight away the wheels in motion are in place to continue to learn how could it be improved next year. And that'll be the drive for Kerry. That's to be the drive for everybody. You know, any team, how can you become better as a coach? What can you learn? Spend time. As I said, don't rush things. Don't rush things. Spend time learning. Apply your practice and be in teaching. We call it being a reflective teacher. Look at yourself. Reflect on your work. Try not to make the same mistake twice. You know, try not to double up on mistakes, because that's sore on you. Like, you know, when you make the same mistake the second time around, and then you really kick yourself because you go, why did I do that again? Mm-hmm. So try and learn from the mistakes. And really just remain inquisitive and curious. And there's so much to learn out there. We're all, this is my favorite time of the year when we're off season, because then you go in, you drill down into stuff to try and find what worked last year, what do we need to do better, what would it change, and what's going to be new next year. And this is the exciting part about it. So my message, that's basically it, Mike.
Brilliant.
All right,
boy. And obviously, it was great, Paddy. We're about the only two fellas that didn't go to Mauritius. So we're, it's great to be doing this in Ireland. Yeah, the lovely weather. So folks, just for the people that are listening again, obviously, another reminder, just that this is obviously that fundraiser for Recovery Haven. And if you do have anything spare, it would be fantastic to make a donation towards into the link that's there in my podcast description below or on my Twitter page. So Paddy Talley, thank you hugely, man, for that. I found that brilliant, and I'm sure everybody else will too. So thanks a lot. Have a great Christmas.
Happy Christmas, Mike. Take care. Good luck.